Hello, my name is Eva, and a belated welcome to part three of the Stockholm Bloodbath of 1520. Last time, we rounded off the monumental events of the 14th century, events which shaped the mindsets of later Scandinavian political thinking. Specifically, I described the foundation of the Kalmar Union on the 17th of June, 1397, which saw Denmark, Norway, and Sweden united under one crown, a crown which was placed on the head of the Danish ruler, Erik of Pomerania. Today, we shall explore Danish and Swedish events in the 1500s and examine which decisions by king and cloth led to the days known as the Stockholm Bloodbath. As the Danish king, Christian II, was crowned in Copenhagen on the 11th of June, 1514, he vowed to reignite the power of the Kalmar Union, which had since Erik of Pomerania ebbed, waned, and at times utterly failed in its vision of a united Scandinavia. Christian II of Denmark came one step closer to his ultimate goal a mere 12 days after his coronation, when he was recognized as King of Norway on the 23rd of June, 1514. But the acclamation and fealty of the Swedes eluded him. Christian would make it his mission in life to sit on the throne of Sweden, and for the next 6 years he would fight with unbrotherly ruthlessness to fulfill his ambitions of ruling his brotherly neighbor to the north. In so doing, he would amass an ocean of bitter enemies, but also acquire unexpected allies. One such was the Swedish cleric Gustav Trolle, Archbishop of Uppsala, an influential city north of Stockholm. Gustav Trolle was a man of decided opinions and stated friend of the Kalmar Union. Gustav Trolle's behavior in 1520 lay at the very heart of the Stockholm Bloodbath, with contemporary chroniclers even accusing him of having directly caused the calamity. So in order to understand the Stockholm Bloodbath, we must first understand Gustav Trolle, and this requires a focus shift from the last two episodes, which have seen us focusing on the politics of medieval Denmark. Now we turn the lens on the kingdom north of the Sound, as that strait of water which separates Denmark from Sweden is known, and in the following we shall explore key political events of Sweden in the 1500s. And we start by looking at Trolle. Gustav Trolle was born in 1488, a son of Erik Trolle, a Swedish statesman in the Kalmar Union era. As a young man, Gustav Trolle studied abroad in Rome and in particular in Germany, probably bringing with him letters of introduction from the influential German nobility, who, to the resentment of many Swedes, still held sway in Stockholm's inner circles. Returning to Sweden in 1513, Gustav Trolle was quickly appointed Archbishop of Linköping in East Sweden, and from here he witnessed his father's attempts at becoming viceroy of Sweden. Ultimately, Gustav Trolle's father failed in his bid. He was outplayed and outmaneuvered by a man who would later rise to become one of Sweden's most lauded heroes, Sten Sture. known as Sten Sture the Younger, defeated Erik Trolle to become Viceroy of Sweden. Upon his accession to the post of Viceroy, Sten Sture let loose a litany of insults directed at the Trolle family. This would set off a generational feud between these two families, underpinned by the fact that the Trolle family were emphatically pro-Kalmar Union, while House Sture fought against Danish overrule. And the Sture family would see key members lose their lives in the pursuit of Swedish independence from the Danish crown. The year 1517 was a tumultuous one for Sweden. Skirmishes broke out with their Norwegian neighbors, while the German nobility of Sweden sought to monopolize the iron ores of West Sweden. It was also a year which saw Gustav Trolle, now Archbishop of Uppsala, embroiled in a vicious feud with Viceroy Sten Sture in matters concerning the lease of land in the church's possession, which Sten Sture sought to give to his loyal allies as a reward of sorts for their fight against the Danish king's attempts to conquer southern Sweden. Gustav Trolle was in opposition to this, and naturally he was seen as an enemy by Sten Sture, for Trolle's family was still on cordial terms with the Danes, and a rumor was put about from Sture's household that Trolle was in fact in secret cahoots with King Christian of Denmark to overtake the whole of Sweden. By all accounts, Gustav Trolle was a man to interfere in affairs in which he had little jurisdiction. He was, if contemporary chroniclers are to be believed, a man in whom enemies found little to like, and a priest whose friends at times disliked him. A difficult man, it seems, and one to bear a grudge. Things came to a head in early 1518, when Sten Sture moved to encircle the mansion of the bishop, a fortress known as Almarastäcket. Gustav Trolle managed to flee the siege, and soon thereafter his mansion was burned to the ground. Gustav Trolle swore revenge, and he had two weapons at his disposal, a clerical and a kingly one. First, Gustav Trolle enlisted the aid of the Pope, who threatened to put Sweden under interdict should they fail to recognize Gustav Trolle's clerical powers. And secondly, Gustav Trolle now came out in public in full support of King Christian of Denmark's escalating efforts to conquer the whole of Sweden. Gustav Trolle was either on the battlefield or near it during the fights of 1518 and 1519, and he might quite possibly have witnessed the Battle of Borgesund on the 19th of January, 1520, in which his arch-nemesis, Sten Sture the Younger, was mortally wounded by the Danish army. While Sten Sture died from his wounds, the Danish army marched from western Sweden, and by September of 1520, Christian II of Denmark and his army had reached the outskirts of Stockholm, ready to ride in triumphal procession through the streets of the Swedish capital. On the 4th of November, 1520, King Christian was crowned King of Sweden in Storkyrkan, meaning the Great Church, in Stockholm. And placing the Swedish crown on the king's head was the newly reappointed Archbishop of Uppsala, Gustav Trolle. His arch enemy was dead. His chosen ally was crowned, Yet Gustav Toller's pursuit of vengeance was far from over. On the evening of the 7th of November, 1520, as the coronation feasts were well underway, Gustav Toller rose from his chair at the high table presided over by King Christian and handed the sovereign a rolled-up list marked heretics. On this list were close to 100 names of people whom Gustav Toller claimed had committed heresy and spoken ill of the king while so doing. All who saw this list would have noticed that every single person included was an enemy of Gustav Toller, and many of them were present at the banquet, having recently sworn allegiance to King Christian and now enjoying the fruits of their new king's hospitality on the absolute promise of amnesty to the king's former Swedish foes. But fighting for your land is one thing. Heresy is something else entirely. A crime for which salvation comes only through purification or death. So, next time. Triumph, vengeance, blood, and lots of it. I hope you liked this episode. Until next time, I have been Eva, and thanks so much for listening.